This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you.
What you guys got going on in there?
Cody's trying to check on something. My computer completely went off, and so did the phones. And
he was trying
to plug in a light for our camera, and maybe accidentally move something. We don't know, but my phone to my left isn't working, Drew. So if someone needs to come on the air, you're going to have to do
all right.
That. I can't play any sound from my computer. Cody is underneath the desk right now trying to figure out what's going on. And I don't know. The phone's still off, Cody, so I'm not sure. Engineer's going to love you. We got power. I heard something.
I did as well.
Yeah. There we go.
Handyman Tap.
We're back. Wow. Self-created issue, but we're back. You know, we're back.
Wait a minute.
No, you know what? Actually, I think this is the business's problem. I'm just going to say that I actually think that this is an Odyssey-related issue.
Way to right your wrong, Cody.
All I know is Dusty signed off. There was no problems. Okay. Cody came over here for 3 seconds, and right, everything shut down for a second.
I know what happened now. This is not on me.
Okay.
I mean, it is in a way, because obviously it was my fault. We work in a studio in which we need laptops and phones and stuff like that. And whichever jerk, and I'm assuming that person does not work here in any way because they're an architect, whatever jerk designed this building relies on everything that you use, Gold, being plugged into one 16-gauge extension cord from God knows where, plugged into a power strip that I believe could only be described from the movie War Games, and then hoping that it all just works flawlessly. So, yeah, the two bigger cords got unplugged from each other. Okay. I thought maybe just like the power switch got clicked, but no, it got actually unplugged. Problem solved. Crisis averted, everybody.
We're back up. Everything's back up. Phones on and everything. We might have a guest calling in a little bit later. There's a chance we could have Michael Massey, depending on how things go out in Arizona today, as he is in the lineup today for the Royals. So depending on scheduling, we could have Michael Massey join us. We know we'll have Vern join us from Arizona a little bit later on around 12:45. Hope you guys are having a good Wednesday. Going to be another nice day in Kansas City, enjoying the heck out of this week after what we've had, obviously. And you guys can join the show as always on video, Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, X, you name it. Also on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7965. So we had Brett Veach on the show yesterday, and of course he was very confident in Travis Kelce's return. He also acknowledged that Trey Smith is at the top of their priority list. And then
Not surprising. Guy
Nate Taylor from The Athletic was on his show, his podcast that he does, Only Weird Games, as well. And he is reporting that there is also growing optimism that the Chiefs are going to sign Trey Smith to a new five-year deal. Now, the Prince have said like 5 for $105, 5 for $110, something in that range is what you're talking about.
Woo!
Look,
not cheap.
Trey Smith's an incredible guard in the NFL. He's going to become the highest paid guard. There's no denying that. I want to know still though, like as I said yesterday, like, what's the consequence of getting that deal done? One, I get it. You want to keep your interior of your offensive line intact. You don't want to replace your entire offensive line. And Brett Veach yesterday told us that that's the difference between the Bucs year. They felt like they had to redo the entire O-line then. This year, they don't need to do that. There's a couple of spots. And Trey Smith, are they a better football team, if we just make it simple? Are they a better football team with Trey Smith? Absolutely. Of course they are.
Yeah.
Are they a better football team 2 years from now with that dollar amount associated with them than what they could be elsewhere? That's what I think you have to answer. And does it mean that Joe Tooney's not getting an extension, or do you now have to extend them because of the dollar amount? That's what I don't know. But on the surface, if we're just saying in a poll question to Chiefs fans, do you want Trey Smith back? I imagine everybody just about would say yes.
I think a lot of it is, I feel like with fans, and I don't think everyone would say yes quite as fast as you think, because I think that there seems to be a division point with Trey Smith as a player amongst fans. I think there's a group of fans who think he is not as good as people make him seem, because I think there are parts of his game that are flawed, like a lot of players that are flawed, right? Because most players aren't robot Joe Tooney at left guard, who pretty much just do every conceivable thing right all the time. But I think that a huge chunk of his game, especially when you consider the fact that offensive line play, I think in the league is just bad. You kind of, if you can keep him, I get the benefit of doing it. But I still think that there's some sort of like avalanche effect. Like, you got to be thinking a couple of steps ahead as far as Juwan Taylor or Tooney and replacing those guys, and eventually replacing those guys cheap and everything else that kind of comes with that assignment. Because otherwise, what are you doing? Because I'll say, Trey Smith is actually kind of a good test for why offensive line play is bad. If the Chiefs said, we don't want you, Trey, how many different teams have we said would love to sign Trey Smith to the exact same deal the Chiefs are thinking about? The Titans, the Patriots, the Bears. There, I can list five or six teams right now who, when they put up their little like dream free agent wish list, Trey Smith was at the top of it. That tells you how bad offensive line play is. He's a really good player, but every single team would sign him to the same deal. That's why I don't think it's a bad deal if they give him a 5-year, $100 million.
Yeah, is he worth the dollar amount? That's what the market tells us he's worth, and so that's the going rate for the best guard or one of the best guards in football. It's just more of, does that prevent you from doing other things? I think it's pretty telling if they end up getting a deal done also, and their belief of being able to find a free agent left tackle. To me, I could be way off here because the cap went up.
They're like, I'm not going to solve all my problems.
But I wonder if they bring back Trey Smith, does it tell us that they don't think there's a free agent? Like, they're not going to spend free agent money really on a left tackle. That's either going to have to be in the draft, which you and I think if it's in the draft, it needs to be trading up. Or is it going to be kind of a 1 year stopgap, and like, I don't know how confident people will feel. It's a DJ Humphreys path, and they truly believe that a whole offseason is going to be good enough for him. I'll tell you, would I rather have, it's weird financially, even though Ronnie Stanley's a better football player throughout his career, would I rather give Ronnie Stanley multiple years and a lot of money for a guy that finally had a healthy year? Or would I want DJ Humphreys on a nothing burger type of deal? There's part of me that's willing to roll the dice a little. You're like, that's crazy. We just saw what happened, Alex. But man, I'm not sold on Ronnie Stanley, I guess is what I'm saying, in free agency. And if you pay Trey Smith, I wonder if that prevents you from paying a decent-sized contract to a left tackle.
They're not. I don't see any world in which they pay Trey Smith and then pay a free agent left tackle. They would then have a high-priced left guard, high-priced center, high-priced right guard, high-priced right tackle, and now they're going to go out and spend left tackle money? Yeah, I don't think so. I think the idea behind, one, you do buy yourself years. Trey Smith buys you years down the road. His big number, I said the same thing about Tooney, and it applies to Juwan Taylor. Trey Smith's big number wouldn't occur until somebody else on the offensive line is gone, whether that either be Juwan Taylor or be Joe Tooney.
True.
So if you bring in Trey Smith, you at least buy yourself a couple of years to get one of those numbers off the books so that you don't have to pay him down the road. And so like that does, I think there's more flexibility than you think, but you can't have five offensive linemen all on like free agent deals, essentially.
Well,
you know,
it's bad roster construction at that point. And it's not, and I don't think it'll end up being that. And obviously Creed Humphrey was a homegrown guy. And so is Trey Smith. Both were drafted by this, by this organization. And you're right. Juwan Taylor, we basically know, has 1 year left. This will be the final year for Juwan Taylor, assuming he's still playing right tackle this year. It'll be the final year, and it's a big cap hit. But Trey Smith wants to be in Kansas City. We know that. And so financially, from a dollar perspective, you know, I think the hometown discount stuff gets way overblown. But is he willing to work with him on a structure? That's where I think you get the advantage, right? You're not going to convince him to take way less money than what he can get on the open market for a guy that's been a six-rounder that, by NFL standards, has not made any money. But is he willing to be flexible in how it's structured to help you out to what you're saying, hey, a year from now, 2 years from now kind of thing? That's where I think you get the luxury of having someone that you have a good relationship with. So if they give a dollar amount that meets the market standard that he can get out there, that's one thing. I think what you would notice is maybe the structure is friendly to Kansas City to allow them to do what you're discussing.
And that's as close to team friendly as you get when you're on the open market for that. We've made it, and I think everyone's made it clear, Trey Smith wants to be in Kansas City.
Yes.
He likes being here. His best friend's in Kansas City. He gets to play for the best team in the league. He gets to play for the best quarterback in the league. Like, there's a lot of benefits to being a player here where you're comfortable with your surroundings. You're comfortable with the organization. They took the chance on you. You're going to win and compete in every year you're here. But, like, the discount could just be like, hey, can we give you a little less signing bonus than the team would give you, but you're going to get that money somewhere, and can we maneuver it? Like, that to me is being team friendly, not the average annual per year. He'll still be the highest average annual per year of any guard in NFL history.
If I play devil's advocate for a second, do you think that, like, do you truly believe they're close, that they're growing optimism, or is this
all 50-50,
or is this a, hey, we're going to show that we did everything possible to keep him, and man, it just didn't work. We wanted him. It just didn't work out, and all of a sudden we find out on day one of league year or legal tampering that he still ends up signing elsewhere. I think that's still a possibility, because yesterday Brett Veach talked about Kingsley, Suamataia, and the guard, the potentially being a guard in the future, and just like the coaching staff is confident he can be a guard. If you bring back Trey Smith and Joe Tooney, unless you let him play out the final year of his deal, which they could, then you are saying Kingsley is not going to have any starting position for you till at least year three.
Mm-hmm. Well,
then I mean, the pick. I know it's a second rounder, not a first round pick, but boy, oh boy.
I'll say though, that doesn't seem that far of a stretch. He got in three games, and then they benched him, and then they never brought him back in a game after that. So it's not like, it's not wild to me. It's pretty believable to think that Kingsley Suamataia might not be the goods. Part of the reason I think it's the truth, that they're actually...
The Chiefs might have the highest paid pair of guards in football if they go with Tooney and Trey Smith next year.
I think so.
Is all I'm saying.
But I, the reason why I think there's a lot of truth to the rumor, not just because Nate Taylor said it, an empirically honest person who has very good sources, is because both free agency and the draft stink in offensive line. You can't rebuild 2 to 3 spots in free agency this year. You just can't. And I get it. You're like, well, really only 2, right? Because Taylor for a year, but you want to start working ahead on that in the draft. If you can, but you can't. Guard, maybe Kingsley's part of the future plan there. Okay. You don't have to worry about center. You do have to worry about left tackle. Because the options are limited and your offensive line already had struggles, I get the appeal of saying, like, well, in a year where there are no good offensive linemen in the free agency class, Trey Smith is the cream of the free agency crop as it relates to offensive linemen. And in a year where most people who follow the draft, including our guy like Jay Binkley, say it's not a good year for offensive linemen, I could see how you get squeezed into being like, you know what? We should pay Trey. There were 17 guards that looked like they were going to go in the first 3 rounds of this upcoming draft. They probably don't pay Trey. You know?
I think it would be a mistake, though, to then also give an extension to Joe Tooney, though.
I
on
agree.
Top of it.
I wouldn't do both simultaneously.
I haven't looked across the league, but I'm willing. I feel fairly confident saying if it's not the highest, it would be a top 3 in terms of what you'd be paying your guards in football. You'd have the largest contract in NFL
Tooney's
history.
Tooney's number's been coming down.
It has. But the combination of what the Trey Smith deal would look like, and then if you gave a new deal to Joe Tooney, That's way too much for guards. I'm sorry, like, just in terms of positional value. It's fine on the Trey Smith thing. I just think if they're willing to do the extension for Trey Smith, then they have to tell themselves that we got 1 year left of Joe Tooney, and that's it.
I'm just going back through because, again, how far down now is Juwan Taylor on the average annual department? He's down to, like, a 12th, 13th, right? So, I mean, now he's paid appropriately. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He is 15th. So Juwan Taylor is officially paid what he should be paid, right? Wow. Roughly?
Wow.
He's paid like average left tackle, and he's a league average left tackle?
The overall contract, yes, but not the $27.3 million cap hit this year. Yes, you're sure. Right on the average salary now, but this year, Juwan Taylor's a $27.3 million cap hit.
To the final.
And there is nothing they could do about it. Last March, it became guaranteed. There's no out until after this year. If they don't like how things go this year, I think it's very likely they move on with a $7.3 million dead cap hit.
I'm just like
he's $27 million next year as well. But they can still get out of that.
Like, I'm trying to look through the other offensive lines and look through the other teams in the league. And yeah, they would be one of the higher ones. But if you look at like the Eagles, they have three players in the top 18 in highest paid average annual salary at the offensive line position. Mailata, whose big number hasn't kicked in yet, Landon Dickerson and Lane Johnson all rank in the top 18, like just one spot behind Juwan Taylor. Actually, the same money as Juwan Taylor. He's tied with Juwan Taylor, average annual. So they got three guys making Juwan Taylor money or more. So is it unconventional to do that at guard? Because two of the guys I just mentioned to you, to the Eagles, are tackles, not guards. I'd say it is. I'm just saying, like, they don't have another choice. The left tackle market stinks. You have to go back into the draft. Same thing applies. I think the Chiefs kind of have to trade up. Unless they're just going to do another year of DJ Humphreys and their forward scouting tells them, oh, there's a lot of good left tackles next year. Let's actually trade back in the draft this year. Acquire picks.
I think it's a possibility.
Things are going to help us move up in the draft next year. We're going to do 1 year of DJ Humphreys or 1 year of any other random vet we can find on the street. And we're going to do this again, sadly. And we're going to ensure the future of our offensive line is good except left tackle. And then we'll solve that then. But then you might be solving left and right. You wait a year, you might be looking for a left and a right tackle. That's tough living, right?
No question. I this is where you wonder what's the big move. Is there something that's coming that none of us know about right now? You know, we asked Brett Veach yesterday, like the big swings they've taken when they've had devastating losses before, whether it was the Bucs Super Bowl, whether it was an AFC title game loss, they traded Tyreek Hill. Is there kind of a surprise bold move, trade or otherwise, that's going to happen this offseason? And it might just simply be trading up in the draft. I don't know. But that's something that I still always wonder if it's out there. Brett Veach at this point in time, I think, has proven that he's willing to take that bold move into an offseason and make that bold move, I should say, into an offseason. We'll get back into the Chiefs and this a little bit later on in the show. But let's talk some Royals baseball. They got another spring training game going on later on this afternoon out in Surprise, Arizona. Josh Vernier is going to join us at 12:45. And we might have Michael Massey call in before they take the field later on today. And you were doing some digging on return trips to the postseason in baseball.
I think it's easy to be like, the expectation for the Royals this year is get back to the league, get back to the postseason. And I kind of agree to the sense to be like, I'm going to be disappointed in any season this year for the Royals that does not end in a return trip to the postseason. I got some bad news. It is way harder than I am making it sound like that, despite the fact Major League Baseball has increased their number of playoff teams in the last decade. So I thought about this because Salvi was talking to the clubhouse here. I did not need to play the clip, but Salvi was like, you know, this team's got a good mentality now. They know they can win. They're not thinking about winning. And all those things make sense to me. Once you know you're a winner versus you're hoping you are, it's a lot easier to kind of like roll that into winning again. Last year, only 50% of the teams that made the playoffs in Major League Baseball went back. And I want you to remember an important note to that. That is, teams like the Dodgers exist. So of that 50%, the Royals aren't 50-50 to get back to the postseason based on historical average. Because high-spending teams are gonna go back, right? The teams who handle their money and know how to handle their money. Like the Yankees and the Dodgers, they're at a disproportionately high advantage of returning to the postseason this year, just based on salary alone. So, like, realistically, it's probably, and I looked up 5 years in a row, 35, 40% chance. I think a market the size of Kansas City returns to the playoffs the following year. Does that put a different perspective on what the expectations for this team should be, knowing that everyone is still under control? I'm not saying you have to do a rebuild year or anything like that. They should be competitive, and I think they will be. But just penciling in playoffs, man, the stats do not back up that that's something I should be doing.
So I think any Royals fan would just say, Well, obviously nobody's going to take it for granted because we just got done discussing all last season how they made their first trip to the postseason in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, so I think a lot of Royals fans are like, well, yeah, we get it. It's not likely.
But the last time they went to the playoffs, they went to the playoffs and then right back to the playoffs.
And look, my expectation is for them to win the division, let alone make the playoffs. Like, the playoffs, absolutely, I'm expecting that. I think everybody in this town should hold this team to that barometer for this season, right? I mean, that to me is pretty clear. Is it going to be another tough task? Yeah, the division looks like it's going to be ultra competitive again, and these teams are very close to each other. The difference between being first and third yet again might be like four
narrow
games or something like that. I mean, I think that's very, very true. And I know we'll have more time as we get closer to opening day to discuss what's it look like if they do get back in repeat as playoff appearances, if you will, or what's it look like if they fail to reach the goal of getting back and winning a division. I think it's actually very clear. It's not hard to figure out what each one looks like, you know, and pitching is a huge, huge part of the equation.
Yeah, injuries. And look, we always know that because baseball's a long season. They lose some important pitcher for 90 days this year.
Sure.
You know, expectations maneuver and change throughout there. But, like, they are a young team, and fundamentally they were a playoff team last year, and they are the same. Like, actually, they're better because they're the same lineup, except for now they have a qualified leadoff hitter, and unlike the last 6 weeks of the baseball regular season, they have their middle-of-the-order bat currently in Vinny Pasquantino. And I know it's on paper, because this is the thing I would be hesitant of on the bullpen. But we know what the bullpen ended up being last year and how hard they fought to be of relevance late. And they were better late because they had Urseg and a few other guys who started to perform and that they traded for that made a difference. They should be so much better in the bullpen. It kind of makes me feel like this case. I'm not trying to temper expectations fully because I do think that, like, it's playoffs or bust in a lot of ways in my mind for what the Royals need to do. But because I want them building an organization similar to what I see in those teams that go to the playoffs 6 or 7 times out of a decade in those small markets, I'm going to have to accept that there's going to be years in which they make the playoffs 1 year and don't the next. And the statistics bear that out strongly, especially for a small market team.
But their best chance, or like if you want to expand this out over the next like 2 or 3 years, their best chance to get there is this year. Like if you're going to say over the next, include last year, a 4 year span.
Yeah, because there's only so much time with Waka, Lugo, and Reagan.
Right.
Although they have those guys under contract for years.
Sure, but just an age thing and otherwise. Like if you were back it up to last year, and let's just use a 4 year sample, and you say they're going to make it 2 out of 4 years. This is the best remaining year, I would argue, over the next 2 years to maybe do it. Salvi gets older. You don't know about the health of Waka.
Because they have Caglione for maybe a full year next year.
But still, we're talking, as much as we...
And it's a prospect.
As much as we're excited about Jack, and he was on the show yesterday. If you missed the interview, it's up on our website and the Odyssey app. As much as we're pumped up about what he probably will bring, that is still an unknown. We are still talking about a prospect. So, you know, banking on that 100% a year from now, this to me is still their best year in this 4 year period to get to the postseason. I think they are better on paper heading into this year than they were a year ago as well. Not just because we saw them do it, but the bullpen is way better this year. Yeah. I think they have their leadoff hitter. We hope to have Jonathan India on the show in the next week or so. You know, the question will be, does the starting pitching that is regress? And if it does, okay, is the offense better? Is the bullpen better to mask that?
I think there's a chance. I think if you made me guess right now, I'd probably agree with you that this is their best, but like, there's part of me that thinks that they're doing things functional organizations do and that the buildup behind and just the general minor league system, not specifically just putting it all on Jack Caglione, would be better because like everyone in their projected 2025 starting lineup is, except for Hunter Renfro, is under contract next year. They can technically return their entire starting lineup again if they want. India, right. Bobby Wood Jr., Vinny, Salvi, Massey, Melendez, Garcia, and Isbell. I'm not saying they'd return all those guys. I'm just saying... Every single, and they're starting projected 5. I think everyone but Lorenzen is under contract. It's like a huge chunk would be back next year, plus an extra year of developing a minor league system where maybe some of the names outplay some of the guys who are in the bigs and take their jobs, and hypothetically you're better. The bullpen's the unknown, but I would say that's just baseball.
Sure.
Baseball, I got no idea what a bullpen's going to look like year to year. That's just, you know, caution to the wind kind of
thing. The only thing I'll ask, if a couple people texted in, they said expecting the Royals to make the playoffs is always a bad way to fan, just begging to be disappointed. I would ask you, though, like, what a year in which they just went to the playoffs, when we, I think we agree, even though there's concerns with the roster, they're either at minimum just as good, if not better, on paper. And on paper doesn't mean results, but on paper heading in, that they're better. Then what is your expectation? Like a year in which you win, what was it, 86 games, I think they end up winning, 86, something like that. Yeah. They won 86 a year ago. For me now to sit here, I'm like, oh, you know, my expectation is for them to just win 80 this year.
What, 75 would be fine.
Then what are we, like, then what are we, I guess, honestly, like, text back, please. Like, what, then what are you expecting? Like, that, the bar should be to make the playoffs again. If I say, oh, you know what? That 1 year was good enough. I don't expect them when they have virtually the same roster coming back. If they would have lost Cole Reagans to an injury and Michael Walker didn't get re-signed and they didn't bring in Jonathan India, then yeah, then I would totally be with you. Like, well, yeah, my expectation is they're not going back because they lost this guy and this guy and they didn't bring
and
in this guy.
They lost Singer, but they got better in the lineup and, you know, whatever.
Like, if your expectation is 70 wins, you're solely basing that off of being hurt for a decade. And I get it. That's all, like, that. That's the only thing you're basing off of. If you're saying you're not willing to have the bar at playoffs, then you are just saying, well, I've been disappointed for 25 years, and they only go to the playoffs three times every 25 years or whatever it was. Like, that's basically what you're saying. That's fine. I get the pessimistic attitude.
But
man, if you're just looking on this year, because again, what's happening with this organization now is what happened in 2008 has nothing to do with the people in the building in 2025.
I also would point out that in all those years that I was disappointed in my youth, they did not build a team like this in the sense that, like, they have a generational superstar, they have a future Hall of Famer maybe in Salvi, and a huge chunk. This is, again, where I think they can get better in the future years. This is a massively homegrown lineup. Like, I mean, a huge chunk. I mean, the only guys who aren't are Renfro and India, I think, probably at this point. And the rotation is not. They're still going to have to prove that they can develop starting pitching and play them. Right now, the entire starting pitching, there's one homegrown guy, I think, in Bubic. Like, end of list.
I think that's right.
That's it. Just Chris Bubic. But they were a smart organization who made the trades that they had to in order to get controllable players at good prices.
Yeah, look, I'm not telling you I think they're going to win 93 games. That's
a lot harder than we think.
Yeah, and I'm not sitting here saying they're winning 93 games and going to roll through the AL Central at all.
119.
Yeah, not saying that at all. I think it's going to be a grind again, and it's going to come down to the final week of the season, whether it's a playoff spot and or division. I think absolutely that's the case. I'm just saying we all grew up in Kansas City, right? Most of us did. That probably are listening to the show, and I get it. Like, normally saying expectation make the playoffs, you'd be like, it's crazy because we've only seen it a handful of times in my life. But like, this year's team is not impacted by what hurt you 10 years ago, or not 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago or 4 years ago.
Plus, undefeated in the Cactus League, so.
Oh, well, that always is a direct indicator, you know? That's always a direct indicator.
There's only two teams undefeated in the Cactus League. That is the Chicago Cubs and the Kansas City Royals. Technically, they have a tie because spring training's funny.
We don't need extra innings in spring training. Thank goodness.
They can do them, but both teams have to agree.
No, what? Nobody needs to agree to that.
I've seen it agree to. It's a real...
Why? Who's agreeing to that? That should be like, if Q agrees
because they
to
have
extra innings...
number of at-bats or people they wanted to pitch.
Oh, man.
If the game goes by kind of quick and that those guys don't get the innings in, they do sometimes agree.
That's crazy.
It's
nobody needs that.
I would just under any circumstances be like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a hard no. Just know that that's the case. I'm not the person who's ever going to agree to it, but I have seen it agreed to.
Up next, we'll get back to some comments from Brett Veach, including something we did not know was going on during the Super Bowl. That's next. Just getting started here on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. Maybe later in the show, we'll get to the NFLPA survey stuff. It's my favorite. You know how much I love these NFLPA surveys. It is that time of the year where the results, the anonymous NFL Players Association survey, where the players tell us how they feel about their owner and their facilities. Remember last year, Clark Hunt got a F-, I think it was.
F-, not grade, just F, he got F-.
An F-.
Seeing it looks like he moved up to a C-.
He did. We can get to this later. You know, I joke because I don't put a lot of stock into it because the minute Chris Jones got his deal done, he jokingly tweeted out, Clark Hunt, A+ owner. I still have a fundamental belief with this, which is, hey, if you're a player that's getting the big deal that you like, most likely you think the owner's great. And if you think you're not getting the deal, most of them probably don't like the owner. Because Chris Jones basically told us that, by the way, he approached that the negotiation and then sent out a tweet and said, A-plus owner. Yeah, I love my owner. I love my boss, too, if I got a huge-ass extension. You know, that would be amazing. I think we all would. Everybody thinks they're underpaid.
Most people do.
You know?
I guess the question is, so like with this grading system, can I ask employer something real quick? Like if you if you own your business and you hire people, or you're just a hiring manager, have you ever checked anyone's grades at college? Because I had to go through this at the end of last semester, Gold, where I had a couple people who had like, I don't know, 86s.
Okay.
And like, anything I can do to get it to a 90?
Right.
Now, you could have done the work before, sure. If you could go back in time and do the work, sure, you can get a 90.
Hard-ass Professor Tapp. Oh,
hard-ass.
Who knew?
It's just like,
who knew?
They were asking 2 days before grades were due, a week after we turned in the final.
Also, 4% is a bit much. If it was like 89.1, that's different.
Yeah, probably let an 89.1 go.
Yeah.
Honest to God, when I was grading the final projects, if they were at 89.1, I think I just jumped them to 90. No one checks your grades. No one cares if you got an 86 or a 90.
So we'll
show them that.
We can talk about the grades a little bit later on in the show. But they did come out, and there's some areas that improved quite a bit, and there's some areas that are still kind of embarrassing from a grade perspective. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it matters as much as people make these. Like, there's some media members that will act like these grades are like set in this is everything. This is everything. This means everything. And oh my gosh, they're just the worst treated people on earth. How dare they have small chairs in their locker room?
But they got them stools. They fixed
that.
They went from stools to chairs.
I don't remember what it was. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right.
I think they didn't like the stools. They got chairs. Well, the chairs.
Just put a bunch of those gorilla chairs in the locker room and everybody would be happy.
Yeah, Drew and I were looking at those on Amazon today. There's some...
Those giant like couch things?
Yeah. We were saying we should get one right in the corner of the studio.
It'd be great for the fan
club. Get one right over here, you know?
You could bring guests, and even if they're not on the microphone, they just hang out in the gorilla couch.
So we'll get to the grades a little bit later on. But Brett Veach, he joined us yesterday, and then he's also been making the rounds there in Indianapolis, talking to various national shows as well. And he said something that I don't think we've heard anybody bring up in regards to the Super Bowl performance. And we don't need to rehash what happened against Philly. But maybe it makes more sense for those that looked at some highlights or even those that broke down film. We're like, man, it looked like Travis was kind of just walking around. We haven't seen that. Well, maybe this makes more sense. This was Brett Veach talking with Pete Prisco and the CBS Sports crew yesterday afternoon.
You know, this year, I mean, we're never going to make excuses and talk about it. But, yeah. I mean, he was battling with pretty big illness there for the Super Bowl, but listen, the way the Eagles played, it wouldn't have made a difference.
And that's the key. The last part's key. Nobody's saying this would have changed the outcome of the game, but that would explain why maybe it looked weird. He was just walking around. We didn't know at the time, I guess. Maybe are we supposed to, you believe that the Travis had, you know, sickness?
He didn't say it. He didn't use the excuse himself, which I think does change it. And Brett Veach spoke to like, I don't know, 7 different media outlets, including us, yesterday. And this was the one that maybe he was like, you know what, I should make a point of saying that Travis Kelce was battling a very serious illness. I don't think there's any reason why Brett Veach would make this up after a Super Bowl loss.
Probably had the flu or something.
A month after it took place. I actually
Bad oysters there in New Orleans.
Could have been. I don't think, I don't know. I mean, I guess could have been. Whatever.
Yeah, those oysters will get you.
I actually think this helps Travis Kelce's image a little bit because I saw the same thing other people saw. When they were down like 24-0, 30-0, there were some moments in the game where it looked like Travis wasn't giving it at all or not with the same fervor that I am accustomed to seeing Travis Kelce participate in either blocking or loose balls or tracking people down. It didn't seem like he was moving with the same juice I am accustomed to seeing, especially in a Super Bowl, even in a game in which they're down. He'll never use this as an excuse. You will never hear Travis Kelce on a microphone say, "This is the reason I played poorly." But doesn't it excuse
somebody will ask him about
like,
it?
For
though.
Me, though, it does put in perspective why it looked like he was dragging ass a little bit in the Super Bowl. If he were 100% healthy, they're still losing the game.
And Brett Veach acknowledged
impact,
that.
It doesn't impact that, but it explains to me why, for the first time in Travis Kelce's career, it didn't look like he was moving with the same. He didn't move. He wasn't operating the same. Okay. He was super sick.
Yeah.
That's not crazy.
It would make sense. He'll get asked about it at some point. The next media availability, I guess it's going to be in May or something when we probably hear from him. Otherwise, maybe he addresses it on a future episode of New Heights. But yeah, he's going to downplay it and not talk about it much. But I also think, you know, if you're Brett Veach, not that it's not being truthful. I think it's that you want to make sure a guy that you're trying to make sure comes back and doesn't retire
has the reputation he deserves to have.
Yeah, you're trying to make sure that you're not covering for him, but make sure people understand why maybe a performance looked the way it did.
I guess the question I was always asked is like a follow-up to that is, if this were a regular season game, week 11, would he have played at all? Would he have been able to physically be on the field?
Because somebody would
be like, hey, why play so much? Well, because it's the Super Bowl.
Travis doesn't strike me as a player that from a sickness is ever going to miss a game. Ever. For being sick.
Yeah. Like, even if it is, like, horrible flu, they're giving you IV fluids at halftime, whatever the things. And again, illness is probably, like you said, either flu or severe food poisoning. That's pretty much it. And flu is the one, at least, we assume, because if it's severe food poisoning, they might just stuff you full of Imodium and call it a, you know, like, call it a day. They'll figure out a way to get your ass out on the field, even if you're feeling a little
bit
fatigued.
When was the last time you got food poisoning? And we know the last time you poisoned some of our listeners or our coworkers.
I don't think that was food poisoning.
Chipino.
I don't
bad
know
Chipino. Got people sick.
God, food poisoning? I don't know. This is always like, this goes back to like the way people exaggerate sometimes. I did a food handler's class once. They made you legally in Missouri take like a food handler's class to make sure you don't poison people. And the guy who taught it was like, I've been food poisoned. I'm dead serious. I have been food poisoned 53 times. I'm like, dude.
What, he keeps a log?
I was like, first
keeps
off.
Keeps a log of how many times he was. It's hard to prove, too, because if you just have food, like the next day like or that night, you don't know.
I'm pretty sure that guy's just lactose intolerant and he's not treating his body right. Dude, you were obviously like allergic to gluten or dairy or something. And you should watch what you eat moving forward. You have not been food poisoned 53 times, sir. I do not think that is how this is going down. Again, I know it's a bit of a PR thing, and Brent Veach probably felt the need. He probably saw the same thing again. A guy who was not performing at the level that he saw, and he felt a need, after a month or so, to defend his guy from what were some attacks a month ago, right? Right after the Super Bowl. But I also think it actually tracks. Like, very simply, yeah, that tracks. Travis Kelce was moving worse and gave worse effort because he felt worse. That's not crazy. I think that's a common thing, even in football, where you're just like, well, just play through it. Sometimes you can't. When it comes to stuff like flu or symptoms or sickness.
All right, coming up in 20 minutes, we'll get back to the Royals in particular. MJ Melendez, I think you guys have maybe heard by now that they worked on his stance, his swing. It's all new. And we'll look at that already and the impact that could have, because it feels like this is a huge year for him in terms of where his career goes, both on the positive end and, of course, maybe on the negative end. So we'll talk about MJ Melendez coming up in 18, 20 minutes or so here on Cody and Gold. I want to talk college basketball for a second. Missouri got a win last night. Nice bounce back. Impressive performance.
Looked a lot different with their center back, I guess.
They did, and against South Carolina. K-State plays tonight against UCF. And then KU doesn't play again until Saturday. But I saw a stat that was circulating, and you know my feeling on, like, college football or college basketball poll rankings. Like, you know, like, that's not something I put much stock into, especially the preseason ones. But whether KU's number one or MU's number five, or I don't care what year it is, I think they're worthless for the most part. It's you use the word PR when we were just talking about. It's PR, it's marketing, it's trying to build hype for a game. That's all that is. I don't believe in them, especially the preseason ones. Did you know that this year is the fourth time ever? Or the fourth time in the last 55 years, I should say.
Not ever, but long enough.
That's long enough for me. That's ever for me, okay? That's forever for me.
That's right? Forever for you plus 20 years.
Yeah. So the fourth time in the last 55 years that half of the men's college basketball preseason top 10 is now unranked. So way back in late October when, oh my goodness, it's the preseason rankings and KU's number one and all that, half of those teams that were in the top 10 are not even ranked anymore.
That's kind of wild. Because they were number one and not top 25. Because, yeah, sure, okay, half the top 25. Yeah, some team you had at 18 wasn't as good as you thought or whatever. Half of the top five's unranked.
Mm-hmm.
And Missouri's ranked in the top 10 now. So, you got to think about, or no, they're not. They're
14th,
like,
I think.
14th. If they win, okay, so they're fringe. They're not quite there, but they're getting close. And so when you start looking at it, I understand they're kind of dumb. But, like, I also think that the sport needs it. Like, some sports need gimmicks.
I think casual fans like to see the ranking. You brought this up.
The casual fan, yeah.
Right. You've brought it up, like, on TV. You know, even though Vegas, a team that's ranked 15th, might actually be the underdog because they're five-point underdogs to the team that's ranked 25th. And so we see the 25th team win. We're like, whoa, what a huge upset. Well, no, that team was actually favored. But because people are trained to look at these rankings, they think, oh, anytime the team that's ranked 20th beats a 15th, it's a massive upset. And that really is not how it, in my opinion, works. But they've created this market angle. ESPN loves it to be able to put out the promo tomorrow or Big Monday, number 9 versus number 15.
I view underdogs as being two different things. You can either be an underdog statistically, right? Like Vegas says you are a statistical underdog, or you're just an underdog because of the systems we put in place. So like a 10 win.
What, a random media member that puts a poll up there?
I think that they operate like.
That's all it is.
Like, yeah, but I mean, I get it. Like in Vegas, it's just an algorithm and they're choosing the metrics in order to decide it. I'm not saying there's not math or science behind it.
I would rather trust that than guy on the East Coast that I know is not staying up till midnight to watch Gonzaga play. And this was, I guess I'll move them up my ranking one spot because you know that happens.
I know, but to me, it's like they're all somewhat relevant. Like I just view them as like two separate things. They're not at odds with each other or fighting each other in my mind. They're just two different things that create the same value. So like if a 10-win football team, who is a better football team, is an underdog to a 7-win football team, not crazy, happens all the time. Vegas is telling you the underdog, but what I'm telling you is the underdog is the team with 7 wins. I don't care if Vegas says they're favored and they're favored by a point and a half. They're the underdog in this game because they're not supposed to win this game in my mind because the other team has done a better job winning.
Yeah, I view them, we just fundamentally disagree on it.
I view them as two separate things. To me, underdog, like you view underdog as it is only a Las Vegas thing. You are not related to it unless it is related to sports game, which is fine.
Well, there's just different, like you even I try view to them make as,
like,
it as
like, so that's why I like the rankings. I hear you. They're two different things.
But trying to make it as simple as one team has more wins than the other, so they're automatically an underdog, I think is way too much simplification because we don't, you know what Vegas does factor in on a Wednesday? The rankings come out on Monday, and that Saturday, all of a sudden a player's hurt. That ranking on Saturday doesn't change. Because a guy got hurt. You know what does change?
Sure.
The odds change.
But
the ranking from Monday is not changing on Saturday. It didn't change for a week. It's a week behind.
No, but it does. But my view of that game changes. The ranking itself, because like it changes in the same way, which is, let's just say Missouri's getting ready to take on the number one team and they lose their best player before the game. Well, it's still an up, but like I don't view it the same way as I did before. They're without their best player. It's still just a number in the end that I don't have to like be beholden to. Like, I actually think the ranking things are really good for the sport. Do they matter in the end for if these teams are any good? Hell no.
Well, especially
no, it don't matter at all. They're just they're guessing like anyone else is guessing.
Especially in college basketball, because college football, the rankings actually matter a ton because they determine how things are going to go. Where seeds, your ranking doesn't determine your seed at all whatsoever.
No, but the AP, the AP top 25 in football does not matter because the college football playoff committee is who comes up with the rankings. So it doesn't matter. It's not the same thing.
Sure, but when we went back and looked at the first college football playoff poll compared to the AP poll, it was essentially a carbon copy of the AP poll. It might as well have been with a couple of different changes where there, I think to Cody's point, there, it helps college sports be good for the casual fan to attract them, but
I've admitted that. Yeah,
the preseason poll. To your point, though, too.
Preseason is the one that really.
The preseason poll makes absolutely no sense because even just looking at it, I didn't have Florida State. I didn't think Florida State was a top 10 team. They ranked 8th, I think, in the preseason poll. They went 2-10, 1-7 in the conference play. The preseason ones don't matter, but I think it's more college football. The polls matter, I think, more in college football than basketball because, like right now, we can look at the team who, I don't know if you really want to go into 35th, whoever's 41st in the country, they're going to get into the tournament. Whoever you think is 41st in the country is going to get into the tournament because they're probably in a power conference. They're probably 4th or 5th in the conference play. It might be Mississippi State. Mississippi State's probably getting into the tournament. Their ranking of being 41st or whatever the case is truly doesn't matter.
They're 24th in the country, man. They're in the AP poll. You're dissing Mississippi State for no reason.
They got throttled.
They're in the actual top 25.
They won't be after this week. They got throttled by almost 40 last night.
The poll's behind now.
But I think for college basketball, they absolutely do not matter. It's more about the Ken Pom stuff than it is the actual
quad one, quad two.
It's more about the Ken Pom stuff than college.
See, this point in college football, the one thing I will say is it tells you where you are. Like, if you are, like, no offense, but if you're 16th in the AP poll, you know you're not in the college football playoff. Whether they put out the standing gen or not, you know you're not in because the AP is 98% accurate to the college football playoff poll. It's the same thing.
It tends to go that way, but I disagree. It's not. It literally is a different group of 10 people. The AP poll, I don't know how many people do the – is it 100 people across the country that do the AP?
There's
I don't know.
There's a lot of people that do the AP poll.
It's random media people, and you and I have both known people
that
have –
But they're doing a really good job.
You and I know there's random people that vote on this in the media, and some of them are very lazy, and there's no possible way they're watching every single game.
And that's very true.
Typically, the rankings –
do you think those 10 people are?
I think it's way more likely 10 people are.
They're not watching every game. They're
I think it's way
to.
More likely.
Sometimes
it is way more likely that 10 people, when most of them are either retired, some of them are current ADs or whatever. It just depends on Condoleezza so Rice was on it or whatever as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I'm sure she got plenty of time to be watching every college football game.
But she also doesn't have to watch every single one, to your point.
You just
she
said that they don't have to watch. It's the same poll.
But it's, oh my gosh, it's not though, Cody. Literally, the AP poll does not matter bit for determining who is in the college football playoff at all. Not the same poll.
But they are telling you who is in the college football playoff.
But they are not.
They have a 99.99% accuracy rate at this point, pretty much.
Is that that's just official? We just were making stuff up? It's very close.
You're talking more about the cross-referencing from week 10 to week 11 of, hey, the AP poll matters. Now
yeah,
it's the college football
playoff. We all have eyes.
Poll.
Nobody's saying there's going to be a discrepancy that a team that was ranked fifth in the AP, the committee doesn't have in the entire thing. I'm not arguing that at all. But acting like on November 5th, what the AP poll has matters, it doesn't. What matters on November 5th is actually what the college football playoff committee, the people that are determining who is getting in, that's what matters. Not random beat writer from Utah that's making his poll vote at 1:30 in the morning after Saturday's college football game.
I think the 10 people who are voting on the college football playoff committee are the same people you're complaining about on the AP. I do not think that those people are just like in a lab, computer monitor, watching every football game. You just admitted some of the people have other jobs. The AD of whatever college isn't watching every college football game that involves all these teams. You can't. You just can't. I'm like, honestly, part of it is just like time.
Right.
I don't think anybody could watch all the games. This is not like a knock on anyone. Like, they gave Drew $250,000 a year and they said, watch every college football game. I don't think he could.
I'm just taking it literal. Like, if Cody Tapp had the Tapp football rankings of the year, yours don't matter. The ones that come out do matter. That's all I'm saying.
I think the AP matters
is,
until the college football playoff comes out.
We can keep going in circles. Like, literally, it doesn't matter, though. Like, fundamentally, it doesn't. That's not what determines who's in it. That's all I'm arguing. It does not determine who's in. The AP poll has no bearing.
I can make an argument that the AP poll influences the college football playoff poll, and it does matter.
Because
they look at that, and they make decisions on the college football playoff poll based on the AP.
I think it does.
They're almost too close to not have B related.
I think that's why also, though, you should have the committee be ranking teams earlier on in the season instead of...
When do they do it? Like week 10?
Instead of like 3 weeks away from the college football playoff, where I think, correct me if I'm wrong, obviously Lenardi's got his bracketology, got Jerry Palm does the bracketology, but when I think... Now the NCAA...
Well, you're arguing it's the same thing, that Lenardi's bracketology is what influences the entire selection committee, and it basically Lenardi's bracketology should be exactly how we view the committee. It's like, basically, that's the same argument you're making. It's still a media member that's doing it.
More powerful thing. I'm making, an entire AP.
I think the AP is more powerful than Lenardi, but I think to the point of what you're making, Gold, Lenardi, his bracketology is likely going to be similar to that of the actual selection committee in the tournament. But if we're going to say the committee, the playoff committee, the selection committee, whatever the case is for either college football or college basketball, they should be coming out with more consistent bracketology to start the season all the way through the end, because they're the ones that ultimately make the decisions. Like, not that it would make Joe Lenardi's irrelevant, but it essentially would, where anything that he does doesn't matter because the committee's coming out with their quote-unquote bracketology
somebody pulled up,
every single
week.
He's just
not even, like, one of the most accurate anyway.
Correct.
Like, completely separate from the conversation. Somebody looked it up. He's, like, the 10th most accurate ever. Yeah, there's some guys we've never...
That's not bad.
Some guys we've never even heard of. Like, there's some site that does that.
I'm sure it's just running, like, some roto algorithm.
Yeah, there's a couple names
Ken
that
Palm at least is in the top five, I think. Or Jerry Palm is, whoever.
One of them's terrible. Like, one of them is wet. You want to talk about just not being in line with the committee or whoever. Like, one of them is the big national names is, and maybe is it Lenard? One of them
is way off every year.
Yeah. It's like not even close. There used to be a site that like would track it.
There's always a tweet that comes out at the end of the year showing how accurate or inaccurate.
And it's surprising, like, all the names we know, they're not even close to the most accurate.
Yeah, the ones who are on TV all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's some random
guy.
Got
more time doing TV. It's just some guy running an algorithm.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure. Coming up here in a bit, we'll talk some Royals baseball or whatever. I don't know. I was trying to find the site.
I am kind of curious now. We have Jerry Palm on every once in a while. We have.
Mm-hmm.
had him on the show before. Like, it's the mock draft guys, too, you know? Like, the accuracy on there, you can't even be accurate in mock draft land.
Yeah.
Good luck.
What's tougher? I think the mock draft's way tougher.
Because you're predicting... If you get 10 right, congrats.
You have to
team and player.
Yeah, there's no way. That's if anybody that hits on their entire first round is ridiculous.
I don't know if that... I'm sure that we would know if that happened from somebody. If somebody's mock draft actually hit bang on 1 through 32.
I found what we were
That's
talking about.
That's never happened.
Someone has a five-year average. So some site I don't think any of us has ever heard of has been the best over the last 5 years of actually predicting the correct bracket. Something called Yago Brackets.
Yago Brackets.
Shout out to them, man.
Okay. Let me find the first name that we know. Oh, boy.
Uh-oh. Can you just give me a name? Who's number one?
Yago Brackets.
Yeah. Oh, who's number two?
131 Sports.
Is Field of 68 on there at all?
I don't recognize any of these names. T3 Bracketology. I've seen that Twitter account maybe before. I'm still scrolling trying to find.
It's probably a lot harder if you're one person versus, again, a giant supercomputer.
Mike DeCourcy might be the first name I recognize. Okay. 71st.
Congrats, Mike.
Dang. That's
top 100. Not bad. You know?
I mean, I don't recognize any of these names. I'm trying to find. Already 118th. Right, 118th most accurate over the last 5 years. There's a whole world. There's 117 people that do this that are better than him.
So I think
that are more accurate.
I'm going to be honest. I think collectively, the three of us, or maybe we'll just do the whole 96.5 cluster. We need to do bracketology every week next year.
Oh, gosh.
Next year, we'll do it every week.
And thank you.
And we'll see how accurate
we are. I don't watch enough college
compared
basketball.
Compared to Joe Lenardi.
I would do a horrible job at that.
It's funny, though. I mean, some of these guys, we should actually look. What we should do, maybe not today, that Yago. Let's look at where they're. That's who I'm going to rely on.
Yago.
Yago or Yago? I don't know. It's a bracket. It's a Twitter account, actually, basically, that does it. Number one ranked bracketologist. Uh-huh.
Okay. I wonder if that's
their latest
Twitter
one. February 4 days ago had the last four byes: Nebraska, BYU, Ohio State, San Diego State. Last four in: Vandy, Wake Forest, Oklahoma, Arkansas. First four out: Georgia, SMU, VCU, North Carolina.
We honestly could wait until now and make our own bracketology and make it accurate.
They had KU as a 6 seed. And they had Missouri as a 5 seed. That's what the most accurate one over the last five years.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. All right. Up next, let's get back to the Royals. MJ Melendez, I think it is a massive season where his entire career could shift one way or the other based off of this swing change and everything. We'll get into that. Plus what Brett Veach had to say about the likelihood of them bringing back two of their upcoming free agents. That's next.